Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, excluding anybody from New York. My name is Fred Adams, and I am an alcoholic. And it's certainly a pleasure and honor for me to speak at Mount Eagle, believe me. I know what an alcoholic is today, much, much differently from what I thought an alcoholic was when I first came on this program. I know an alcoholic to be a person who takes one drink and cannot predict the outcome. It's as simple as that. That's what, to me, an alcoholic is. When I first came on the program, I knew an alcoholic to be a derelict on the Bowery. A person that didn't have a clean shirt, dollar in his pocket, family, wife, or whatever. I had that. So I was not an alcoholic. But as this disease of alcoholism progresses and a person becomes sober, so does most people's mentality, except for this gang right here. I grew up in a family, I'm here to tell the truth, but I grew up in a family that was middle upper class. My father had an automobile agency and he entertained a lot of people. And there's plenty of alcohol around the house, but I was not interested in it whatsoever. Until I became about 16 years old. And when I started to drink it, I found I liked it very, very much. I took a girl to junior prom. She bought a beautiful dress, shoes, whatever. We went with another couple. One of them suggested we stop and get a drink. We did. I can honestly and truthfully tell you, we never got to the prom. So you see, the disease of alcoholism was in my system, chemistry of my body. I did not know it. I graduated from high school. My father wanted me to go to college. I was very knowledgeable. I knew more than anyone else. I did not want to go. I went to work for him and his brother. And they enabled me to drink. I was paid whether I worked or not. Fortunately, I became engaged to a girl I'm married to today. I got drunk occasionally growing as I grew up, but I thought that was part of life. And I got a letter, like many of us did, greetings from Uncle Sam, that you have been selected. We had a barroom that I visited quite frequently in town, and everyone that went to service, he gave them a going away party. Now, I had a reason to get drunk, because I was going away, and believe me, I did. The next morning, I had to get up and go to the draft contingent. I don't recall who took me or who was driving the car. It was my sister, my father. But as we came up the street from my house, onto the main street, where this fella had the bar room, he stood on a corner. Hey, Fred, here. What did he have in his hand? He had a bottle. Whoever was driving stopped. He said, Fred, take this with you for good luck. I said, no, Andy, no. And I can honestly and truthfully stand before you on a Sunday morning and say, I did not want it. Believe me, I didn't, because I didn't know what it would do to me. But I took it with good faith, because he gave it to me. I put it in my suitcase, got on a train. Of course, being a big shot, that I thought I was, I reached up and got my suitcase, and I took the bottle from the suitcase and took a drink from the bottle and passed it around. A couple of fellas took a drink, came back to me. I took another one. You know, I began to feel better. And from that day on, I never suffered from a hangover. Because I had the magic stuff. I went to service. Wherever I went, I found alcohol available. No problem. Wherever it might have been. Some of you fellas in the Navy used to call it torpedo juice. Fellas in the Air Force called it instrument cleaning fluid, whatever. But we called it plain alcohol. In the Pacific, it came in a 6 gallons in a case, tin can. We became very friendly with a fellow who used to pull permanent sergeant of the guard. And we were running short. And they were bringing in a shipment before it was on inventory. He'd come down and get us. We'd go up and get a case and put it under the tent. So we had no problem with alcohol over in the Pacific. This one, of course, I was associated with the people that drank the way I drank, particularly a fellow who was a mess sergeant. And by that time, I obtained the rank, big rank of corporal. I'd up and down like a yo-yo, you know. And I kept the rank of corporal. And I was a cook, because we had a day on, a day off. I had plenty of time to drink, and I loved it. But anyway, this one day, we out in the grass, and this mess sergeant passed out. And as he laid out there, every time he'd breathe, it seemed like every muscle in his body would expand or contract. Oh, I just looked at him, I said, I'll never drink that stuff again. About 3 days later, and the next day I said to him, Greeny, you've got to quit that stuff. I said, you know what happened yesterday, you passed out? I said, every time you took a breath, you just seemed to, every muscle would expand and contract. I'm never going to drink that stuff again. 3 days later, he said to me, Fred, you know you're right. That's exactly what happened to you. So you see, alcoholism has no respect for anyone, no matter what walk of life you come from, whatever. I can't tell you anything. You can't tell me anything until I am ready to listen. But anyway, those days you got, sit back, you only got 3 hours to go yet. In those days you got discharged on a point system. One other fellow and I left the outfit, we had enough points, so we came back. On the way back, we promised ourselves a drunk. Now you see, normal people would have said, when I get discharged, I'm going to have a nice meal and enjoy it and go home. We got in what is known as Fort Dix, was a discharge center outside of Trenton. We got drunk. We got in New York. Those days you gave him a little cash and the check for your mustering out pay. We spent the cash we had. We went in the bank and got our checks cashed. We spent that money. Buckley said, well, what are we going to do now? Where our money's going. We haven't got any money to go home with. I lived approximately 60 miles from New York City. Buckley lived 150. So I said, well, I know a fellow over here in the barber supply business that lives in Highland Mills. I'll go and borrow 100. So we went over. I said, Dom, loan me 100. Where have you been, he said. You know, because I came home by boat, so it took a couple of weeks to get home from Guam. And he said, they're waiting for you. You better get home. I said, no, no. I said, I need the 100. He said, we got to keep partying. Oh, no, no. He said, I'm going to take you home. I'll give you the 100, but I'm going to take you home. I said, what are you going to do with Bucky? He said, where does he live? And I told him he lived in Walton, approximately 150 miles. He said, okay. He said, I'll buy him a train ticket. So we went over to Penn Station. He bought him a train ticket. And that's the last I've seen of Bucky. But I hope if he's still alive, he's in this program because he needed it desperately. You know, birds of a feather flock together. We'll never forget it. But anyway, I came home. Fortunately for me, I was engaged to a girl I'm married to today. We got married. I went back to work for my father, of course. And they enabled me, as I said before. They paid me whether I worked or not. But the disease of alcoholism continued to progress. Everyone else knew it except Fred Adams. Fred did not know that. But anyway, you know, an alcoholic, at least this alcoholic, they visualize, they dream. You know, there's a group right there, watch them, look at them, you know. But anyway, they also had an oil business, and I wanted it. I got involved in politics, and of course, I got a copy of the letter that the postmaster job in Highland Mills was available, because in those days it was political, and at that time they hadn't made the appointment from the Democratic administration. Hadn't made the appointment because the previous postmaster just retired. I thought, well, that's a little lever for me. So I said to my father, well, I want that oil business, otherwise I'm going to leave. And he said, well, where are you going to get the money to buy it? I said, you're going to give it to me. Yeah. I said, you talk to your brother and see if he can't work a deal. So I knew his maneuvers. He usually went home about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I said, what do you say, Pop? Well, he said, I haven't talked to your uncle yet. I will now. I said, you go in there and talk to him, and I'll be in. So I went in about 5 minutes, and I said, well, what do you say? And I said, we can't agree. I said, okay, then I'm going to leave. I hadn't said anything to my father about this, nor my uncle. My uncle looked at me and said, where are you going? I said, I'm going over to the post office, the acting postmaster. In those days, you got the appointment, and you had to pass the test, and if you got in the top 3, you got the appointment. But that was a gamble. But anyway, I said, well, Alan, if that be the case, if you won't give it to me, I'm going over and take the job as acting postmaster. My uncle looked at me and he said, what's the matter, are you crazy? You'll never hold a job. And I looked at him, I said, why not? He said, well, you're drunk all the time. Believe me, I told him exactly what I thought of him. It was none of his business, and that I was not a drunk, but I did drink a little. But anyway, I left. But he did make me aware of my situation. So, being an alcoholic, not knowing it, but I knew once I took the first drink, I couldn't stop. I knew that. But he made me aware of my condition, situation, so I tried to hold it to weekends. Because I knew once I started, I couldn't stop. But this disease of alcoholism continues to progress. And even today, I know the disease of alcoholism in my system is growing and growing and growing. But anyway, I tried to control it, but an alcoholic cannot control his disease of alcoholism. The compulsion, the physical compulsion, the mental compulsion, you just can't control it once you put alcohol in your system. At least this alcoholic, and I can only talk for me, no one else, only me. If you can identify, put up your hand. Hey! Okay, what about you, Jim? Yeah, okay. But I'd go over to get a haircut. It took me a long time to get back. I'd make a mistake. I'd stop in the bar room, Andy's place that he gave me the bottle to go away with, and it'd take me a long time. You know, that's why I don't have any hair today. It took a long time to get it cut. And I'd go back over and I'd try it again, and the same thing would happen. I'd go in, somebody would put glue on a seat, and I couldn't get up. But anyway, As I said before, this disease of alcoholism continued to progress. Now, I was I'd gotten the appointment as postmaster by that time, and the things just, I tried to do a job. Fortunately for me, I had some good help. But this disease of alcoholism within me was progressing all the time. I got to the point, every morning I go to work with a hangover, except when I take a couple of drinks. As I said before, I found a medication to fix me up. I tried to be active in organizations in town. Excuse me. I was very active in the ambulance corps. Just one day we'd picked up someone in an accident and we'd taken him into the hospital. We stood outside the emergency room and one of the two gals who was on my team looked at me and said, Fred, you look very bad. And being honest, I said, yes, Norm, I don't feel well at all either. She said, you know what your problem is? You drink too much. I said, yeah, I do drink quite a bit, Norm. Why don't you try to slow up? Of course, an alcoholic, you know, I said, I'm going to quit. For how long, she said. I said, a year. So she said, Fred, you'll never do it. I said, yes, I will. What do you want to bet? So what's an alcoholic bet? Quart of booze, right? That's exactly what I bet her. She said, okay, that's a deal. That was, I would say, in the neighborhood of September of 61. I didn't drink Christmas, New Year's, whatever, so on and so forth. Floyd Patterson used to be heavyweight champ of the world, lived trained in Highland Mills. I got to know him very well. First being postmaster, he got his mail, and I used to go down and watch his workouts and so on and so forth. And he was leaving for Chicago to fight Liston. And I wished him well. Or not wished him well. He said, Fred, why don't you come out to the fight? And I looked at him, I said, well, champ, if you send me in a couple of tickets, I'll come. He shook his hand, I said, Fred, isn't my word good? I said, definitely is. Okay, he said, if you come, I'll give you two good punch tickets that you'll never forget. I said, okay. I said, I'll be there. So my father, in his younger days, used to judge fights for the state of New York. So I said, Pop, how would you like to go see Patterson Liston fight? He said, I'd love it. It's okay, we're going. So when it came, I guess the fight was September of 62, we went. We went to the fight. My father took a bottle along with him. Once in a while, he'd take a drink. We went to the fight. Of course, you know the outcome of the fight. And Patterson got beat. So we were staying in a motel, my father and I, and he put the bottle up on a dresser. I have not had a drink from the day I bet Norm. He'd gone to bed. I sat there and turned on the television and watched the television. My head started to work. I looked over at the dresser, saw the bottle. Back and forth, my head started like a yo-yo. Yeah. Ah, I'll have one. Nobody will know it. So I walked over, very gentlemanly-like, put a shot in a glass, had a little ice there, and put a little water in it. Came back, sat down in front of the TV, and sipped the drink, you know, like a normal person does. First thing you know, of course, it being empty, I went back and filled it up again. That was cool. I came back and sat down again. You know, the second one went a little more quickly. I went back and got the third one. I went back and got the fourth and brought the bottle over. I finished the bottle. Naturally, I was an active alcoholic. I had put alcohol in my system. The compulsion, the mental compulsion, physical compulsion was right there. Next morning, my father got up and he looked at the bottle. He said, "What happened to the bottle?" I said, "The rats got in it." He looked at me, he says, "Hello, rat." You know? Now, he knew that I had not been drinking. He knew that. But he couldn't understand why I started. And I never told him. I went up to my cousins in Detroit. And, of course, I was an active alcoholic. I had alcohol in my system. And I sat there with Jack and my father and his wife, and we began to have a family gathering. And of course, I being an active alcoholic, I consumed quite a bit. Jack said to me, "Fred, where are you putting it all?" Yeah. I just laughed. I thought it was a big joke. I came back to Highland Mills. Excuse me. I did not drink. A year to that day that the bet was up, Norm came in the post office and gave me the bottle. She said, "Fred, I never thought you'd do it." I said, "I never did either, Norm." That's one amend I have never made. But I took the bottle. And in those days, I was still am a good Giant fan. But they did not televise the Giant games in the local station, TV station, but I had an antenna cut for Hartford, Connecticut, where I could get it. And I used to have people in my house and entertain them, gave them drinks. I did not drink. I had this bottle, as I said, that she gave me for the bet that she owed me, she thought. I picked out a fellow that I knew drank the way I drank, because I attended many parties with him, and he and I were one of the last to go. I said, "Iggy, I got a brand new bottle. You and I can drink it." Of course, I had no problem. He and I finished it. I opened another one. We started on that one. From January of 1963, as near as I can put time together, I continued to drink. The progression of alcoholism grew within my system. And I had gotten to the point where I needed to drink every couple of hours. I left the office one day because I needed a drink. I stopped in a gas station, which was across the street from the post office. A young fellow walked up to me, about 21 years old, and he looked at me and said, "Fred, do you know what you need?" I said, "Yeah, Hans, I need a drink. That's exactly where I'm going." "No, no," he said, "you need AA. I looked at him, I said, "What do you know about AA?" And he told me exactly what AA was, a fellowship of men who have a problem with booze. He said, "Believe me, you do." I looked at him, took his inventory quickly, young snot-nosed 21-year-old kid, I thought. Been in jail, wrecked cars, been in fights. I said, "What do you know about AA?" And he told me that his father had taken him. And he said, "I've been sober 3 months." And he says, "I'm out talking." He said, "That's what you need." And I looked at him. I remember I shook his hand as I left. I said, "Good, Hans, brother, you need it desperately. You hang in there." And I went on my way. That was on a Friday afternoon before Labor Day of 63. Monday, which was Labor Day, I was back in the same gas station. I lived about a block from there. They tell me I'd been in and out of there like a yo-yo, you know, suffering from blackouts and didn't know it. But all of a sudden, in the neighborhood of 7:30, I came to from this blackout. A There I was in the same gas station. I looked at myself. Dirty looking. The light went on. You know, I think I might have a problem with alcohol. But I'm not an alcoholic. I drink probably more than the average person. But Hans planted this seed. His father took him to AA. His father lived up on a hill from me. I said, well, I'll go up and talk to Bill. So I went up, knocked on the door. I said, Bill, I'd like to speak to you. Well, sure, Fred, come on in. And I began to tell him my problem. I said, Bill, I think I drink too much. I didn't have to tell Bill my problem because Bill and everyone else in Highland Mills knew my problem except Fred Adams. Anyway, he agreed he would take me to a meeting. He told me what AA was. He says it's just exactly as the boy had told him previously, or told me previously. So I said, all right, where will we go? Well, we've got one in Monroe, which is 4 miles away. We've got one in Highland Falls, which is unfortunately where I met Wally. We've got another one here. And then, no. I wouldn't go there. That was too close to home. You know, that was how sick I was. I didn't want anybody to know I was trying to get sober, but I didn't care who saw me drunk. It made no difference, you know. But anyway, I agreed that I would go to a meeting in Suffern, which was 22 miles away. So he took me. And it was a closed meeting, as I know today. We started around the room. They said, my name is so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic. Boy, felt sorry for him, because I knew what an alcoholic to be, a derelict on the bower, as I told you before. So, as they went around the room, I gained a little knowledge there. Some people said, my name is so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic, I passed. So when it came my turn, I had to say something. Everyone else said their name was so-and-so, they were alcoholics, so of course, when a Rome, you do as a Romans do. So I said, my name is Fred. I'm an alcoholic. You know, it's like Edgar Berger and Charlie McCarthy. You know, I did not mean it. I had to say it. But I said, I pass. On the way home, Bill said to me, what do you think of the meeting? I said, well, Bill, if they're alcoholics, they're in bad shape, and I feel sorry for them. I really did, because I told you I knew what an alcoholic to be. I went home. Bill would call me night after night. I'd say, no, Bill, I have to do this. I have to do that. I had 14 excuses why I couldn't go with him. But I had one reason. I did not want to, because I didn't want to associate with you people, with you alcoholics. But you know, an alcoholic does have a conscience every once in a while. And I began to have one. So I would say to Bill, once in a while, probably 3 times within a month, if it was that often. I said, okay, Bill, I'll go with you. Of course, I looked at you people, you know, these crazy slogans you had, but for the grace of God, live and let live, think, boom, boom, what nonsense this is. Kindergarten stuff. Nonsense. I can do this myself. I don't need you people. It's too simple. I'm a smart, intelligent person, I thought. I didn't need your help. Well, as I told you, this disease of alcoholism continued to grow and grow and grow, and it began to grow rapidly. I progressed, as I said, to start with as a social drinker, I thought, to a daily falling down drunk. Now, believe me, I had, as Wally told you, I had a job that was supposed to have been a respectable job by a respectable person, held by a person. Everyone else knew I had a problem. You know, an alcoholic is a con artist. And believe me, I was one of the best, I thought. In our town, we had 7 bar rooms. And I had gotten to the point. Fortunately, I had obtained this oil business. And I had means to support my habit of alcoholism. So I would visit one bar room each day, different one I would try to, so you wouldn't know how much I drank, and you wouldn't know how much I drank. Who was I kidding? Fred Adams, nobody else. Well, I'd gotten to the point where my wife was very, very, she didn't know what to do. She was desperate. She used to try to talk anything she could say to me. And she said one day, but this one phrase she used to say, Fred, why don't you stop drinking? Why don't you at least drink home? You know, people are supposed to respect you, but nobody likes you anymore. Wherever you go, they want to get rid of you because you're a pain in the... Yeah. And I laughed, you know. I said, well, what are you talking about? I said, you've got all the necessities of life. You've got food, shelter, clothing. You've got a house to live in. You got a roof over your head. You got 2 kids. In the meantime, we had 2 children. And she looked at me many, many times. She said, Fred, I would love to have a husband, and your kids would love to have a father. Boy. What have you got? We've got a drunk. But it didn't mean anything to me. Well, anyway. As I told you, I began to frequent 7 different bar rooms. But there was one, there's always one favorite watering hole one has that he returns. You know, like a bad penny always turns up. So, this one place I used to go to. I met a fella sitting at the bar. We used to drink together. He said, Fred, do you know what you need? What do I need? He says, you need AA. And I looked at Mike. I said, what do you know about AA? Oh, he says, it works. I said, what do you mean? He says, I belong to it. I said, what the hell are you doing in this bar room? He's drunk, too, you know, and we had many drinks together. Oh, he said, you know, he says, I told you, he says, it works. But he said, I made a mistake. I said, what was that, Mike? He said, I took a drink, and I can't stop. He said, but you should go to AA. It'll work. I laughed. My wife belonged to a card club, and he was having a Christmas party there at this place called Ohio Manor. And Mike sat at the bar. Of course, he being an active alcoholic, you know. So he heard someone call her June, and he knew my wife's name was June. He said, are you by any chance Fred Adams' wife? Well, all you have to do is say that to her and she'd crawl under the rug if she could get there. Because she wanted no part of claiming me, believe me. And one of the girls said, yeah, she is. You know, what he needs AA. He said, I'm going to get sober and I'm going to take him to AA. Oh. Well, you know, you never, never know. Now, Jim, believe me, I promise to tell the truth, and I'm gonna. I continued to drink. I never, never missed Mike. One night I went home in my usual condition, drunk. You know, we were talking on the way down, Harold was talking about insanity. Believe me, I have no problem with that second step. Because I used to pay a mortgage and sleep on the lawn because I was ashamed to go in the house where I had to meet my wife, face my wife and kids. Many nights I'd go to sleep out on the lawn until he went to bed. Yeah. I'd go in if I woke up. And I'd get up in the morning because I used to try to be a clean drunk. I'd get up, take a shower, and get dressed to go to work, always with a suit and necktie, and try to be presentable. So, this disease of alcoholism continued to progress, as I said. So I went home one night. Who sat in my living room, in my recliner? Mike. I walked in, staggered in. Hey, Mike, how you making out? Very fine, he said. You want a drink? No, no, he says, I'm not drinking today. I said, what the hell are you doing here then? No. He said, I came to take you to an AA meeting. You know, up until this point, I had tried many things. I had promised my wife, I had promised my kids, I had promised myself, I promised everybody, I promised God, you don't know how many people I promised that I wasn't going to drink. But I took that first drink the next morning to get well, and I was off and running, just like a new man. You get the new man, he's drunk and off and going again. That's exactly what happened. But anyway, I said, Warden, what are you doing here, Mike? He said, I came to take you to an AA meeting. As I said, I'll go. My wife said, you wouldn't take him in the shape he's in, would you? Well, sure, he said, I'll take you. I'd be glad to take him if he'll go. You know, that's a problem with alcohol, with AA, and I don't know about down here, but up north, if you come in there drunk, they don't want to bother with you. Where the hell do you think you should take him? To church? No, you should bring him to AA, where it belongs. Anyway. So anyway, I went out in the kitchen, reached up in the cupboard, took a drink from the bottle, because who can go to an AA meeting without a drink? Who can sit for an hour, you know? Instead of going up to the bathroom, no, I went over to the kitchen sink, I threw a little water on my face because I was going to look as good as any of you people, I thought. And off I went with Mike, drunk, you know. And he took me to what I know to be an AA meeting, a closed meeting. Remember, I came in this meeting drunk and late. They had a little table there where the speaker and moderator sat. I pulled up a chair and sat right on the end. Naturally, I was only drunk there, so of course I had to be on display. And when they got through with their identification, as they do, does anybody have any problems or anything they'd like to discuss? So naturally, I was the only drunk there, so I had the biggest mouth. I had the first question, yeah, how do you get sober? And this fellow's name was Leo. Thank God for Leo. He stood in the neighborhood of probably 6'5", 6'6", and weighed in the neighborhood 380 pounds. Big, huge man, wonderful personality, but he scared me to death. Well, he said, stood right up. Well, the first thing you got to do is keep your mouth shut and listen. And believe me, he frightened me. I was very quiet. I don't know what was said at the meeting, except I do remember the close of the Lord's Prayer. Am I allowed 2 more hours yet, Jim? After the meeting was over, he walked over to me and said, do you honestly want to get sober? Or I sure do. And believe me, I did. Because I had gotten very, very sick of being sick and tired. Well, he said, if you go home tonight and you don't drink anything, and you wake up in the morning and you don't drink anything more tomorrow morning, or you don't drink anything all day, and you go to another AA meeting tomorrow night, you will have gone 24 hours without a drink. And that's exactly the way we work this program, a day at a time. And he talked to me. He was a good con artist. Of course, he being a sober alcoholic, he conned me into saying a lot of things. Yes, 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 yes. Well, I said, don't forget it. He looked at me and said, can't you go 24 hours without a drink? Boy, sure I can. You know, I'm drunk. I am. But I can go 24 hours without a drink. Okay. Thanks for the water, Wally. See, I shamed him to bring it over. So anyway, I listened to what he said. I went home, noontime from a lunch. My wife pretty near dropped dead because I'd come home for lunch again for a change. I went to an AA meeting that night. I went back to work. I worked all day. My clerks couldn't believe I was around the post office all day. They just couldn't believe it. Impossibility. But I was there. I went home for my dinner at night. My wife couldn't believe I came home for two meals in one day. I went to an AA meeting that night. And I sat there. Realism came. By God, I have gone 24 hours out of drinking. But I shook. But I realized what Leo told me was true. One day at a time. Of course, I became educated. I knew how to drink. I was here about 5 weeks. And I had to go to a seminar, post office seminar for 2 days. And I was reluctant to go because everybody knew that Fred Adams drank. You know, we begin to be conscious of what people think of us. But anyway, I conned myself into saying, well, I'm not going to cocktail party. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. Well, of course, first thing you know, you're sick. I'm sick anyway. I don't know about you people, but I know I'm sick. And I never want to get well either. Because after, it's what you and I learn after we know it all, that counts. You know. You get that one, Jim? Okay, I'll explain it to you later. So, I made the mistake. I went down to associate with these people because they knew that Fred Adams drank. That was me, my head. I was doing a job. I wonder where he is. Where is he? Where is he? But anyway, I conned myself into going down about 15 minutes before the... supposedly the cocktail party was over and the dinner was going to be. So I made up my mind that I wasn't going to drink, but I began to walk around and I knew people looking at me. Well, I was either a beer drinker or a rye drinker. I didn't like scotch, I didn't like bourbon, I didn't like Manhattans or anything like that. So I walked over to the bar and I picked up a Manhattan because I knew I wouldn't drink it. I knew that. But as I walked around, I sipped this Manhattan. You know, it was delightful. So, of course, I had three more. I didn't need you people. I went over to telephone room service, sent a bottle of EO up to room so-and-so where it was. Fred Adams followed that bottle up to the room. And, of course, I, being an active alcoholic, continued to drink all night. I don't know. I woke up or whatever, came to or whatever. And this bottle was under the pillow. I took the bottle from under the pillow. I went into John. There was a mirror in there, probably Three times the size of that easel. And I looked in the mirror and I saw myself. I became honest for the first time in many, many years. I saw myself what other people had seen me for many, many years. Nothing but a drunk. Look, bleh, taking a drink from the bottle. Up until this point, I had admitted I was an alcoholic because I went to meetings with you people. And I said, my name is Fred, I'm an alcoholic, because everyone else said it. But when I saw myself in this mirror, I had to accept what I was. I said, you SOB, you are an alcoholic. Honesty. As near as I can put time together, I called my wife at 8:30. I didn't get to the seminar the second day they brought me home. Of course, I, being an active alcoholic, went back to the bar rooms again for my lunch. But I sat at the bar. I had my third drink. I began to think what you people had taught me. How to stay sober by going to AA. For 5 weeks, I was dry. I wasn't sober, I was dry. It takes a long time to get sober. But anyway, I admitted that I wanted what you people had. I pushed the glass over to the bartender. I said, I hope that's the last drink you'll ever sell me to drink the rest of my life. You see, I wasn't working the program properly, because we just do it today. But anyway, I walked out and went back to work. I came back to the program. I got an excellent sponsor. I began to work the program the way you people taught me, but particularly the way he told me, because he was a rough individual. He got this program hard. He played around with it. He almost died. Bill Reynolds has had the same sponsor. Bill's sober today too. But anyway, he told me what to do. He didn't say, you better do this, you better do that, you better do this. If I would suggest you do this, he said, Fred, you do this, you do that if you want to be sober. He said, remember, you do it a day at a time, and no other way. I couldn't accept that, because I knew that Fred Adams couldn't drink safely the rest of his life without getting drunk. He knew that, because I projected. But anyway, I used to drive a lot by myself. I used to think of many things. I took the word alcohol. I said, now what can I make out of that word alcohol that will make some sense to me? And I began to think and think and think and think. Of course, I was a slow thinker, so it took me a long time. But I came up with a simple phrase, alcohol, A-L-C-O-H-O-L, a liquid chemical of hell, off limits. I said, that's the way I've got to be. That's the way it's got to be. Then all of a sudden one day, you know, of course, when I came into this program, I'd lost contact with my higher power, who I choose to call God today. Day at a time, I began to communicate with him again. One day I was in a car, and poor me, I won't be able to drink safe the rest of my life. And I'd been sober 6 months, I'd been dry 6 months or whatever, sober, without a drink anyway. And we began to communicate. I said, Christmas is coming, yow, yow, yow. My sobriety date is March the 20th, 1968. And this was around September of 68. And I said, I can't understand, God, how I can live my life a day at a time like you tell me to do. Well, he said, we communicated back and forth. He said, Fred, how old are you? At that time, I was 47 years old. And he said, how did you get to be 47 years old? My answer quickly back to him was a day at a time. He said, that's the way you have to live your life. From that day on, I have no problem living my life a day at a time. Anybody knows me knows I live my life a day at a time. No other way. I plan, but I do not project the outcome. Okay. My sponsor, as I said, told me to do things. He didn't tell me I should. He didn't tell me to do whatever. But he told me what to do, and I did it because I followed him, and I was sober. The only thing I knew, he told me, don't analyze this program, utilize it, and you do as I tell you to do. And he told me to go to New York, down to the A convention, which is held every year in the Hilton Hotel. My wife went with me to many, 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 many open meetings. So I said, June, would you like to go to New York? I'm going down to New York to the Hilton to the international conference. Yeah, she said, I'd be glad to go with you. So I went down. She and I went. I don't remember how I got the tickets, where I got them from. I think through a group or something. I'm not sure which, how I got it. But anyway, she and I were there in those days, probably maybe $25, a big deal then. Anyway, we went on a bulletin board. There was a little, probably an index card. It was 5x7. There's a little notice on the board that Bill W. was in room so-and-so, and he'd be happy to meet and greet anybody. And I saw that. I'd heard so much about the man. I'd love to see him. I'd seen pictures of him. I said, June, if I went up to see Bill Wilson, would you go with me? Fred, I'd go anywhere with you if you're sober. So I conned her into going. Between us, we conned each other into going. So we went up there. Today, believe me, I honestly, I give the world. Here it comes. Well, fellas, sobriety, I don't care. It's worth every tear I can shed. Believe me, it is. But anyway, we went up. I looked in this room, and there he sat with a man on a settee on a couch. And I waited until this person got up and went out. And I went in scared to death. My wife went in with me. I shook hands with the man, and I told him, this first year I was trying to get sober. Before I got through, he and I sat on the couch for 3/4 of an hour. He told me part of his life. He told me about meeting Ebby, and we were on different things. And I told him about my life, trying to be sober, and so on and so forth. And we sat there, we talked, believe me, for 3/4 of an hour. My wife sat over in a chair, never said a word, just was listening. First thing you knew, a new person came in. I got up and I said, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Certainly been a pleasure talking to you. I said, I'm going to go because someone else would like to see you. I said, do you have anything to tell me that might help me keep sober? He shook my hand. He said, Fred, yes, remember, don't drink and go to meetings. Now, as simple as that. Now, if it worked for one of the co-founders of this program, and after I met him, he lived until 1971. This was in 68. He lived 3 years. But from the time he became sober in 1935, when he started this program, by the way, you're making history. 59 years ago this month in May is when this program of Alcoholics Anonymous was started in Akron, Ohio. So you see, this month you're here on Mount Eagle. Thank God we're all here together, giving it away to each other. But anyway, that's what he taught me. That's what he told me. So it's worked for him all his sobriety, and it's worked for me 26 days, 26 years. It'll certainly work for you if you want to work it. But in order to work it, you and I must do many, many things. We must put these steps in our lives that our good buddy spoke about last night. It must be part of your life, part of mine. You must give it away to keep it. You must put an effort in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous or you'll get nothing from it. All right, I'm going to close. All right. I want to thank this committee for having asked me to speak here. It's an honor for me to have been able and asked to speak at Mount Eagle. Our buddy started out with a story last night, or wound up with a story last night about a horse. Well, I'm going to wind up with one too. So maybe you'll go off this mountain remembering horses if you don't remember anything else. But I hope before you leave this mountain, you got a message from one of the four speakers. I don't know you won't get. I know you won't get much from me, but please try to find something in my that I've talked to you about that you remember. You know, as I told you, I got in this program. What a gang! I came in this program. I told you, March 20th, 1968. Okay. One of the first things I heard in this program was a story of a horse. When he spoke about it last night, it brought back to my mind identification. You know, this is a program of identification. In 1968, the economy wasn't too great. Things were cheaper before inflation came along. Of course, I told you I live approximately 60 miles from the city, and we had a lot of those city folks move up there and try to take it over, like just exactly as we're going to take this program over here in Mount Eagle someday. We Yankees are going to do it. But this fellow came up, he moved his family up, and he said, well, now we're here, so he built this house, you got to put the lawn in. And his daughter says, yeah, it'd be a nice thing. Says, you know, Dad, you've got to have fertilizer for this lawn. She said, I'd like to have a horse. You know, he began to think. He said, that makes sense. He said, I could get a horse. He said, I could take it out to a farm somewhere, and they could board the horse, and I could get the manure and bring it back and put it on my lawn to grow. She says, you know, Dad, that'd be a good idea. You know, anything to help her try to get this horse. So he went to the farmer, and he said, I'm going to buy a horse. He said, now how much would you charge me to board my horse? So, of course, in those days, as I said, the inflation rate hadn't started. So he said, about $150 a month. He said, that'd be very good. He said, but I'll have one request. He said, I'd like to have the manure from my horse that I could spread it on the lawn, but I only want it from my horse alone. No, he says, there's a whole pile over there. Go help yourself, get all you want. No, he says, I only want for my horse because I want my lawn to grow. No, he said, I can't be bothered. So he went to another farmer, and he asked him the same question. Price went down, $100. Oh, boy, that's good. He said, cheap. Now, he said, but I want the manure for my horse. Same thing. I can't be bothered. The whole pile, no, he said. Then I'm not going to bother with you. So I went to another farmer, and he said, I've got a horse. He said, I'd like to board my horse. Now, how much you can charge me? $50 a month. Oh, he said, that's fine. That's a good deal. He said, I have one request. He said, I want the manure from my horse on my lawn to fertilize my lawn. Farmer looked at him puzzled. He said, what manure? He says, the manure that comes out of my horse. Well, for $50 a month, you don't put anything in, you don't get anything out. That's exactly the way this program is. You and I only get out of this program what we put in it. Thank you very, very much.